What is sexy in Van City? I don't know. I think you're going to have to tune in and find out on 101.9 FM at 10 o'clock Wednesday nights. Stay tuned.
Here I go again, back into your arms. Whatever happened to us all?
Well, 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 welcome to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners. However you've decided to spend this hour with us, we are really, really, really glad to have you. Well, music is in the air when it comes to Vancouver,
all the time. We've got all sorts of great stuff, but with the Jazz Festival opening this weekend and with Canada Day, it's pretty exciting. It'll be Lilith Fair and Sarah McLachlan. You just heard a little bit from her. That was Illusions of Bliss from her new album, and Laws of Illusion, which is very exciting because it's her first album in 7 years, and Canadian artist, very exciting. And even more exciting is with Lilith Fair, as she's going and doing that across the country, she is actually donating $1 from every ticket sold to a charity that helps women. And so you might wonder, what's she doing in her home base in Vancouver, in Van City, where she's from? And it's very exciting because she's actually donating $1 from each ticket sold to Wish Drop-In Center, which I'm very excited because I've got the executive director, Kate Gibson, online with us tonight. Welcome, Kate.
Hi, how are you?
Wonderful. I'm so excited you're able to join us tonight.
Yes, I'm very pleased to be here. Very excited to talk about this.
Well, I'm really excited too, because I mean, Sarah McLachlan, Wish, it's exciting, and congratulations.
Well, thanks very much. This has been it's been quite a ride to get to this point, but it's really exciting that there's a group of women making music who are supporting another group of women who live in different circumstances than they do. I think it's really something that they do, this reaching out to women who live in challenging situations.
Tell me a little bit about the women that Wish helps.
Well, the women who come to Wish, for some of your listeners might know about us, but those that don't know about Wish, it's called the Wish Drop-In Center Society, and it's been in existence for the last 25 years,
wow,
assisting women who work in what we refer to as the survival sex trade. So that really refers to women who work out on the street and are really probably the most vulnerable of women working in the sex industry.
And that's about 20% of the women in Vancouver, approximately, in sex trade in general. Is that correct, approximately?
Yeah, between 10 and 20% of the women who work in the sex industry work on the out on the street, and then the balance, I think that your listeners would agree, they see the ads in the Georgia Strait,
mm-hmm,
or they see the ads in the newspaper or in the phone book. And so those are the women who work off street.
Got it.
There are also women who don't work, you know, in the downtown east side. They work, you know, all over Vancouver in different areas. And so they're sort of in different vulnerabilities. But the women that we see at Wish are primarily women who really lack the ability to make a choice or to turn down a customer based on their instincts simply because they're desperate and they're in need.
And the average age, I believe, across Canada is 14 in terms of entry into street life. And I know I read one study where it was 12 in terms of street life in BC, which kind of horrified me, to be honest with you. It was a study out of University of Victoria, but mm-hmm, I don't know if there's been more recent information since then.
Well, I think that's definitely one of the things, but I do think there's lots of young women who end up out there on the street, but then there's women who, for a variety of reasons, end up working on the street. And lots of, you know, there are women who work out there on, you know, weekends when they've run out of money to support their children and feed their children, and so mm-hmm, they're out there on the corner too. And they're very vulnerable. They have children at home that they're, you know, doing their best to care for, and they are not, probably don't have quite the heightened instincts of women who work on the street all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're actually very vulnerable out there.
In terms of the word vulnerable, describe just some of the things that in terms of for the women that they face on a daily basis, which may be things that we don't think about just as a society all the time.
Well, I think that there's a few things. I think you know that Wish puts together what we call the bad date sheet.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Red Light Alert, and we put that out about once a week, and we take the reports. We're sent them, a lot of them, from our MAP van, which is out on the street all over Vancouver all night long.
I am so glad you have that back on the road.
Yeah,
I was excited about
that. I am too. So they come from the MAP van. They come from different agencies.
Mm.
They come from our drop-in center. And those reports just tell a tale that I think many of us just don't understand what that, as you say, what vulnerability really means. Mm-hmm. What it really means is that there are people out there whose really their purpose is to harm, and they do lots of harm, and they degrade women in the worst of ways, and they hurt them physically and emotionally, and they do things like, honestly, they smash their foreheads into dashboards. They steal their money and throw them out of their car when it's moving. They trick them by picking them up and then taking them to a site where there's in fact a whole bunch of guys in one place, and they are raped. And while there's a lot of people think that rape does not happen in the sex industry, well, of course it does. It's, mm-hmm. it's not consensual. It's not a known quantity, and it's horrible, and it's traumatizing for women.
Of course.
Yeah.
No, it's really, really, really scary. And I remember actually when I used to volunteer, it was years ago, and I remember when they mentioned in terms about bad dates, at first I thought it was bad dates, like the guy didn't pay for dinner kind of thing, until, because I was that naive when I started volunteering there, which I've evolved a lot since then. But, mm-hmm. And it was really horrifying. I remember the first time I saw one of the sheets, and it scared me, just some of the things that men would do to women. And it was just like, I can't believe this actually happens, and it happens on a day-to-day basis, and that's...
It does.
It's a reality, unfortunately, and we think it doesn't happen in our city, but it does.
Well, and I think that there's sort of two sides to this. Mm. There's a side where there are definitely women have regular customers who aren't those people that go out looking for trouble and mm-hmm. looking to hurt. There's definitely that whole part of the sex industry, street level and off street, for sure. But then there are these terrible people that really, it's who knows if it's all about power, it's all about them not having control over what they want to have control over in their personal lives. And at one point, one of the women said to me, you know, we take the beatings out there that they don't give out at home. And that's one of the things that they really feel, that there are guys out there who really are, they sort of have a double life, and that at home they just look like the regular guy, and they, out on the street, not so much. You know, mm-hmm. they're dangerous and difficult. But I can't stress enough that that's not everybody. That's certainly not everybody that the women meet or the women know or the women rely on for their income.
Mm-hmm. There's varying levels, and I like the fact that you address that in terms of the different types of Johns that the women have sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very valid point, where there are men that are looking for the girlfriend experience, and then there are men who are out there physically to harm and to get as much power as they can over another individual.
Mm-hmm. And take advantage of it. It's dark, it's surreptitious. They, you know, there are all those things that, mm-hmm. You know, everybody likes to think that it's a different kind of person, but you can actually just look as far as Tiger Woods to find out, you know, the kind of information that actually is true about a lot of people who are out there seeking that thrill, whatever it is, that is going to fulfill them. But it is, of course, all about them.
Mm-hmm. It really is, and I think that's really, really key.
Yeah.
What are some of the things in terms of Wish, like your favorite, because you've been with Wish for quite a while now.
And I have. I used to be a volunteer at Wish.
Mm-hmm.
I started 9 years ago volunteering, 9 years ago this month. And since then, I, of course, have become the executive director.
Mm-hmm.
The last few years, maybe the last 6 years or so, and I think that there's lots of things that I love about Wish, and I think that, but particularly, it's obviously the women themselves. They are they're quite a force to be reckoned with. They're fun, they're resilient, mm-hmm. they're sometimes, you know, when they talk about what's that little thing about girls, you know, when she's bad, she's awful. Well, you know, it goes for women of any age, I've discovered. I can tell you though that there is so much to appreciate about people who really have faced so many challenges and continue to face those challenges, but somehow also continue to put one foot in front of the other, and create a life within their own community. And I know that the Downtown East Side, so often people just think it's just a cesspool, but I think what people don't understand is it is a community and it is a culture, and that's where people do have their friends, mm-hmm. and that's where they're comfortable and they know people. So, you know, that also helps to keep them safe. We do lots to keep women safe by providing safe places for them, mm-hmm. but also, just within their own community, there's a lot of people that they rely on one another, and it is a home. Much mm-hmm. as lots of people poo-poo that, it is a home.
And I think that's really, really important to recognize, because a lot of people, as you said, don't. And I know with the revitalization, too, in certain parts of the Downtown East Side with the new Woodwards Project, I guess it's not quite as new anymore because it's been a couple months now, but yeah. But just there's a lot of new places going up. I know just last week the West Ender actually had a couple of reviews about a few restaurants, one in Chinatown, one the Acme Cafe as well on Hastings Street. So, you know, just trying to get more people down there. And how is that affecting the women?
Well, I think it affects everybody, not just the women. Mm-hmm. I think that one of the things is that there's sort of this... it's difficult because you don't want it to be a neighborhood where there is no activity. We've seen that in a long time, that, you know, there's so many places boarded up and it's just very bleak. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you want a community, you want to recognize a community that is already rich in so many ways culturally, mm-hmm. and has such a diversity of folks who live there and who contribute in many ways. And I think that's where the problem is that we need to develop a community that includes those folks who already live there. Mm-hmm. It can't be exclusive to those who can afford to be there, or we really do a great disservice to those who are already there.
So what do you think the key is in terms of building that kind of healthy community in terms of the ones that are moving in, and so it doesn't turn into an us and them thing?
Exactly, and I think that that's very difficult. I know that within the Woodwards building there is a whole program for integration so that there are, you know, mixed income people within this building. Mm-hmm. I think that that will be interesting to see how that works, but you don't also want to develop it so that you pay lip service to mixed income, but when it comes right down to it, there's no place that the sort of disenfranchised or actually fit into mm-hmm. the program, even though there may be some place for them to live there or whatever. It's just, it's not very inclusive. And so I think that really so much of that conversation has to come from the very people that it affects the most, and that's the residents. And that's the women, and, you know, I'm sure you know that there's a very large number of men live in that neighborhood. It's about 70% men to 30% women, which, mm-hmm. of course, when we're talking vulnerability, that definitely makes women really vulnerable within that neighborhood as well, not just out with the Johns that they encounter. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's not a simple
solution.
It's not simple. It's not straightforward. But I do think a lot of it has to come directly from those who are most affected.
Okay. So is there some steps perhaps as a community that we can do to strengthen relations and just help those conversations come forward?
Well, I think there is a fair bit of that taking place. There's something called the Carnegie Community Action Program, or I'm not sure. It's Community Action, and they are doing all kinds of things, and they're quite active. They're mm-hmm. very active, in fact, in, you know, bringing to people's attention the situations that people find themselves in if there's no community at all as it currently exists, if that's all taken away and people like you and me move into the neighborhood and into refurbished buildings that once you know, are key to the health and safety of people who actually live there. So I think that there, you know, it's a very difficult line to draw on how to integrate different parts of society to make a whole. And it's isn't simple. No. I don't think there's a simple solution. I think that when we see how Woodward's pans out in the long run, I think that that'll be interesting. But I also think that, you know, the city, as the community, the Carnegie Community Action folks will say, I mean, the city has committed to having, you know, replace room for room and housing for housing within the neighborhood. And I hope that that is truly what happens, because there are a lot of people who that is their only home. And if you set them free to someplace else, you know, if you move them to someplace else, that isn't really necessarily the healthiest thing for them.
No, I don't think so at all. I agree with you.
No. So anyway, and for the women, certainly, I think that there is some housing for women now in the ATIRA, for instance. The ATIRA Women's Resource Society has several places. And then with all the new, you know, commitments by the provincial government and the city of Vancouver combined, there will be more housing for women. But I think that there still is not a net gain in housing for the folks that already live there, which is unfortunate. And it doesn't leave them in a very safe place, because that's one of the big problems with some of the housing now, is it's not safe at all.
And when you say not safe, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think that it's not safe because the doors don't lock, or if the doors do lock, they are easily, you know, it's just one kick to the doorknob and they are open. And so women in particular, but all kinds of people who are vulnerable, they're really vulnerable when they live in places like that. And I think the other thing is that they're unhealthy because they aren't, you know, they're not clean, and there's all kinds of infestations of rodents and bed bugs and cockroaches and all those things that are really unpleasant to think about and to see. And I think that, you know, that it's a situation that really is unforgivable. But I always look at the city and, you know, people think, well, why don't the city close them down? Well, if the city closes them down,
where would they go?
No one has anywhere to live.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this catch-22 about how to manage that situation so that people actually do have a safe place to live, and there is a proper lock on the door.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who work on the front door who don't let people in who shouldn't be there, and, you know, aren't really random in the way that they deal with people coming and going within someone's home.
Yeah.
Because they are someone's home.
And that's really important to recognize. One thing I love about Wish is Wish Drop-In Center is it is a really safe space. And for a lot of the women that, even if they are living somewhere, that is their home. And I think that's really, really key.
Well, I think that they, you know, one of the things that we work towards through our volunteers and through our staff is that people, we welcome people openly with an open hand, and we don't create a space where there's judgment and shame of any kind. And I think that, you know, our mission is to, you know, increase the health and safety of women working in the sex trade in Vancouver. And really, that's what we aim to do with the drop-in. It is it's a non-judgmental space, and it's welcoming, and we want women to definitely have a sense of belonging, because so many of the women that we know and that we see are you know, separated from their families. They're not included in mainstream society. They might be people who make others uncomfortable and don't want to look them in the eye when they pass them on the street, all those sorts of things. And so, you know, it's really important to create a place of inclusion so that the women who come to WIS and the women that work out on the street do have a sense of belonging and a sense that people do care for them.
No, that's really, really key. What are some of the things that when you're doing volunteer training that you educate them in terms of creating a safe space for the women?
Well, I think that in terms of volunteers, we have lots of people, lots of women who are interested in volunteering for WISH.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what we really look for is individuals who don't come to WISH with an agenda and they're going to, you know, save someone or any of those sorts of things.
Do you get that sometimes?
Of course.
I thought so.
We're not in the business of saving people. We're in what we do is we offer very frontline, on the ground support for women who often find themselves in crisis, often find themselves feeling absolutely shunned out of almost anywhere.
Mm.
And we're looking for the person that has an open mind to welcoming people in whatever state they're in. We definitely have an environment where people don't use drugs within our space, and which is really their space, so they mm-hmm. don't use drugs there. But, you know, we don't, if somebody has been using drugs, they don't have to wait till they are sober and clean to get a meal. And we feed women probably between 80 and 120 meals a night that we serve.
Wow.
Plus then we serve sandwiches at 10:30 when the women start to go home or go back out to work.
And is that 7 nights a week these days?
That's 7 nights a week.
That's
we
great.
Used to only be open 6 nights a week, and mm-hmm. since we've moved into our new facility in the last year and a half or so, we've been open 7 nights a week, and I think that it really makes a difference in the lives of women who are, you know, haven't got a safe place to be and don't have the care that some of us are privileged to have in life.
I think it's so key. Congratulations, by the way. I don't think I've said that to you yet in regards to space, because I remember when you got the $1 million grant in, I believe it was 2004 through Van City.
Yeah, 2003.
Foundation.
Actually,
2003.
It's been a long time now. Yeah.
Wow.
And we, you know, it's for those of your listeners that don't know, mm-hmm. we spent almost 21 years in First United Church because they were kind enough to welcome WISH 25 years ago. And when WISH had no place to go, it originated in Mount Pleasant. And when the solicitation laws were brought into force in Canada in 1985, a lot of the residents in that area really weren't keen on having people working up there. So
not in my own backyard.
Well, yeah, and it just, you know, it doesn't work for everybody. And so anyway, WISH moved down to First United Church and was there, as I said, for almost 21 years. And so in the interim, we were fortunate to have the members of Van City vote to have WISH win their $1 million award. And it was to build a facility. So as the years went by, it was very hard to get a facility because nobody wanted us near them. And there was a lot of public outcry no matter where we tried to move. There were some problems. But finally, we found a place that the city of Vancouver actually owns this building.
Mm.
And they leased it to us for 10 years for $1 a year. So we took our $1 million and from Van City, and then the gaming gave us some money, and the city of Vancouver, of course, was very generous and helped us get the building built, and we've had it open in September. It'll be 2 years.
Congratulations.
Facility. Thanks. Yeah, it's very nice. It's a great place, and we've been able to really expand and provide more opportunities for women to be involved in the working environment of the drop-in. We have our security is actually, we don't have, you know, the kind of security that lots of people have with big guys in uniform. We have a supported employment program called the Peer Safety Patrol.
Nice.
And it's made up of women who come to WISH, and they go through a 6-week training that includes, we've just had some women finish it. It was 16 workshops.
Wow.
That they go through that range from self-defense to I'm trying to think, money management, because for lots of these women, they have never actually had a paycheck, or it's been a long time since they had a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
So they've taken some courses on financial management and how to do things that way, which has been really great, very illuminating for some. And first aid, safe needle retrieval, all kinds of things. And so we now have a supported employment program for women who come to WISH.
That's
and
fantastic.
They provide the safe accompaniment for women, and also for our volunteers. We have a huge volunteer base, and so they walk them to the bus, they go out and they do outreach on the street, probably within about an 8-block radius of WISH, and distribute the bad date sheets and talk to women about WISH, make sure they know WISH is out there and the kinds of services that WISH provides. So it's actually been very successful. It's been really great having those women do that work.
I think that's fantastic.
Mm.
Have you had some of the women move on from WISH where they've, in terms of, because you've got some great programs, and I know, if I remember correctly, the Mobile Access Project as well, which for those listeners out there who haven't didn't hear Laurel Irons, who used to work for the project, where it's basically, I always thought of it as WISH on wheels, in regards to having harm reduction, and some, I believe it handed out sandwiches as well as and just safety kits and stuff like that, and basic first aid.
And supplies, harm reduction supplies, which is it's something that, just as a little background.
Thank you.
WISH and PACE Society, which is Prostitution Alternatives Counseling and Education Society, WISH and PACE came together, about 7 years ago now, joined in an agreement in a partnership to put together the Mobile Access Project and get it out on the road. And it is a mobile WISH, but the thing that's really great about it is that it goes all over Vancouver. It isn't just situated in the downtown east side. It goes out to Boundary Road. It goes over to Seymour and Davie area. It goes as far south as Southeast Marine Drive. So it goes all as far north as all in the area, the industrial area around the docks, and further east. So it's a very all-encompassing project, and it was put together by PACE and WISH, and we've been operating it. WISH is the operating partner, and we've been doing it in March, it was 6 years. So 6.5 years, it's been out on the road. It is staffed with 3 women every night, and they work from 10 at night until 6 in the morning. So they're out there when there's nobody else out there keeping the women safe.
That is literally the graveyard shift, and I think that's when they need it the most.
It is. It's definitely, it's something that the women so appreciate, and I think last year when we lost it due to lack of funding, we lost it from the 13th of June till the 7th of September, and it was heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just really fortunate that both the City of Vancouver and the government of BC really stood up at that time when we finally got it organized. And they stood up and they both said, these women matter, and we're going to support this work so that women out on the street are safer. And they both, I think, having the provincial government and the municipal government make that statement and really support us financially was really something else.
That's so wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, have you found, just in general, because there was a lot of media coverage at the time, have you found that people's opinions have changed a little bit, and have they been more open and more supportive about WISH, just in general?
I think so. I think that actually, unfortunately, that started when with the trial of the missing women. And I think that is when many people in Vancouver stopped to listen and stopped to think about what horror that is and has been for women and what that really means. And I think that so many people have, unfortunately, a far better idea of what vulnerability out on the street really does mean.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, it's been a it'll always be a sad time, and it's a it's fortunately we all work towards having women, less vulnerable to people like that. Mm-hmm. And, they're always talking to one another about trusting their instincts and producing sheets of safety tips and sharing them and all those sorts of things, which, some people might not think that that's, it's straightforward. But in lives that, just to get a meal and get a roof over your head every day is really a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
Producing things that keep one another safe and being involved with one another for each other's safety really is an important thing.
It is. It really shows that community.
Well, there is. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. I was just going to mention one other thing about the van, is that one of the reasons to have the van is also there was an employment factor here, which was to offer women who were exiting the sex industry who wanted to exit the sex industry, offering them an opportunity for training and skill development by working on the van. And so that meant that there were women that it was the first square job they ever had off the street was working on the van. And lots of them have gone on to other jobs, working for other social service agencies. Like Atira. Atira employs lots of the women that we know. And I think that, it has been very successful. Mm-hmm. The van has been very successful in providing that kind of employment and those kinds of opportunities. If you've worked on the street all your life, or a good part of it, you have lots of transferable skills, but it's not that simple to go to a potential employer and say, well, I do have lots of skills that are transferable, because then you have to out yourself as a sex worker, and you can't just go there and say, well, here's my resume, like everybody else. So actually, we have been able to provide opportunities for women to work on the van, and they have definitely moved on from there and made dramatic changes in their lives.
I think that's so great.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed in terms of in the last, because I know when I volunteered at Wish, let's go back to, say, 2000, very, very strict in terms of having the women, in terms of media, just in terms of giving their voices, in terms of having them speak to the media. And I was just curious, because I know when I'm with Beauty Night in the downtown east side, the women I know that we work with sometimes are very comfortable with where they actually want their pictures taken now. And it's changed a lot, whereas before I would have never allowed it, where we do glamour girl shots and they are absolutely over the moon to get all that. And I was just wondering, in terms of with Wish, have you found the women, if social media has changed things in terms of the fact, like having things like Facebook, where it's almost like, I like to think of it almost as a reality TV world and things like that.
Well, I have to say our policy is still not to, there are no pictures taken at Wish.
Okay.
There's no recording of the women or who they are, for instance, because it is, lots of women, as you well know, lots of women's families don't know where they are or what they're doing, and it's not always good for them. And I know that sometimes this is considered to be very paternalistic, but on the other hand, we have all kinds of requests for people who want to come and observe the women. That's what they want to do, and it's like shooting fish in a barrel. Women come to Wish to be in a safe place, to be where they want to be and not be exploited in any way. And so, I think that they should have a choice to have their pictures taken,
yes,
for sure, but it just isn't going to be a Wish, because we are not able to, we are able to control who comes and goes, and it is our policy not to do that. And where I think that that's a really nice thing about Beauty Night is that it is a setting where it's appropriate for those who want to do it.
And our clients aren't all survival sex workers either.
No, they're not.
So we've so it's a different demographic. But I was just curious because I've just noticed because when I was first approached about that, at first I turned it down, and then in the last year and a half, Valentine's Day, the first time we did it, because up until then, whenever we had done anything before, it was always up to whichever agency we were at, and we always made sure that they got the disc with all the photos on it.
Yeah.
Because then that was usually with Ms. Claus at Christmas time and fun stuff like that.
It's really fun. It's always really fun.
Which I have to admit, I still like getting my picture taken with Santa myself.
I know.
I haven't changed that much since I was a little kid.
But I think, that's one thing that we could talk about too, is that beauty night at Christmas time, on Christmas Eve, they come to Wish, and they're all dressed up for Christmas, and their little Santa suits, and they have presents for all the women. And it's really, really heartwarming and so much appreciated by the women when beauty night comes in. And it's just a great thing because it's thinking of others. And it really makes something that can be a very hard time for lots of people, whether they're homeless or without family. It's hard for lots of people at Christmas, and it's just a really warm, lovely thing that Beauty Night does Christmas time for Wish.
I think Christmas can be, you're saying, in terms of it being, it can be difficult for everyone, and I think it's one of those things where sometimes it's because we have a lot of expectations around Christmas and special occasions in general, as human beings, as a general statement, and it's an interesting thing, but I like fulfilling those even still, so it's a lot of fun, or at least trying to anyway, so it's...
Well, and when people don't necessarily have families, they still want to be cared about, and they still, you know, want to feel that warmth of the season, and that's one of the things that is really great. And, you know, Beauty Night comes, and we also have Christmas dinner. I don't know if you know this, Caroline, but Capers/Whole Foods, probably for the last 5, 6, 7 years, they have given us all their food from a couple of their stores on Christmas Eve. And they come in and they bring it, and they bring a whole truckload of food, and then we get it all organized, and that's what we serve along with turkeys and stuff that we cook, but they give us all the stuff that we can use for Christmas dinner.
That is fantastic. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they've done it for years, and they're so, so generous. And I don't know if you probably don't know this, but they just recently, you know, when you go to Whole Foods or Capers and they say if you, you know, if you don't take a bag, is there a charity you would like to donate to? Well, the staff choose their charity, and one of our staff members went to the one on Robson Street one day, and they said, what charity would you like to choose? And you can choose from this, or Wish. I just said, I work at Wish. How did that happen? Anyway, they're very, very generous to us. But speaking of Christmas, that's where we got started here, is that they also are very generous to us. So, you know, it's people like Beauty Night, people like Capers Whole Foods, and all kinds of folks who drop off presents and goodies at Christmas for us, for the women. It's just really wonderful.
If we can make Christmas 365 days a year, what are some of the things that we can donate and contribute in terms of obviously time, money, so then that way the programs can keep going and you can add more programs to meet the mission and stuff like that? What are some other things that you'd like to have contributed?
Well, we're really fortunate. What's really great is when people give us clothes that, you know, gently used clothing that is, you know, somewhat up to date, not always completely up to date. But I always say to people, they say, well, what would the women like? And I say, well, they're girls. You know, they like cute clothes. Just like everybody else. And I think it's really nice. We get, we can always use clothing. We can always use cosmetics and shoes, umbrellas, all those kinds of things. It's really great because that's what women need. They often don't have bedding. They don't have clothing, or they don't have any place to launder their clothing. All kinds of circumstances come up and they don't, they need, you know, warm things in the winter and cool things in the summer.
Mm.
So it's really great. And sometimes in the summer, if people donate bottled water to us, I know that's not always the most PC thing to have these days, but truly, if you run into people out on the street who are very dehydrated, it's a terrible thing, and they become very disoriented, and it's very unhealthy and
it's
very hard on the body. So sometimes in the summer, people will also donate water to us.
That's fantastic. I'm even thinking in terms of if they've got cherry trees or apple trees in the backyard,
mm-hmm.
perhaps
mm-hmm.
if you've got extra that you're not going to use, drop it by.
That would be excellent. It's a great thing to do, or they can do it through the Greater Vancouver Food Bank, who has a food runners program, who delivers to us twice a week. And so a good part of our food budget, in fact, comes from them.
That's fantastic. I like the fact that you're partnering with other agencies.
Well, it's really, I mean, I think that's one of the things that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people ask us what goes on in our drop-in when we're not there. Well, there's a lot goes on in the drop-in when we're not there. We have a partnership with the BC Centre for Excellence for HIV/AIDS, and they are doing a five-year longitudinal study with women, and both testing and education on HIV/AIDS, and so they're tracking a group of 500 women for 5 years. So they use the drop-in center during the day to do their interviews, and we have a clinic there. So they use the clinic, and they do testing and counseling, pre- and post-test counseling, and referrals to the nurse practitioners and the street nurses who come to the drop-in at night and provide nursing care and professional care for women as well. So they're there 3 days a week. We have Capilano College offering a program during the day, skill development, you know, learning, literacy program during the day. And we have lots of people use it besides us, which was always our intention. It was to be for use for more than just us at night, and that really has worked out very well.
That's so fantastic.
Did you know that that where the drop-in is actually our neighbors, our co-tenants in our building are the Vancouver City Police?
I did not know that, but I think that's very apt and very safe for the women. So I think that's great.
It's the evidence garage. So it's pretty interesting. But it's secure, that's for sure.
We are going to take a really tiny, really quick short break. And when we return, I want to find out more about with the Lilith Fair. For every dollar that is raised from each ticket, I'm just going to let everybody think about this, the types of things that we can do for the future of WISH so then it continues to grow and help more women. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be right back.
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the helpline is one of many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The helpline number is 604-696-4666 or contact us online at www.aidsvancouver.org.
My name is Natasha. I am a robot now. I am playing with my breast again. Nothing to do, nothing to do. Sometimes I listen to Misery Hour with Hans Close Wednesday at 11 before midnight. I don't think I like it.
And we are back in Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM on CITR. If you're just joining us now, we've been chatting to the Wish Executive Director, Kate Gibson, which I've been very excited to hear more about the updates with Wish. And for those of you who are not familiar with Wish and you're just joining in now, it's Women Information Safe House, and they have been picked by Lilith Fair, which is going to be on Canada Day for all of those of you who are trying to figure out what to do in Canada Day. Head down to Ambleside, but make sure you buy your ticket, because a dollar from each ticket is going to be donated to Wish. And they can continue to do some more of their wonderful work, because they've been doing such great work for over 25 years. So it's pretty exciting. Kate, what would you like to see in terms of, if you could wave a magic wand in terms of Wish, and 10 years from now, looking back, what would you like to see?
Well, I think that's pretty easy, actually, for me to think about that. I think what we would really like in the long run, we had always intended to have the drop-in center open 24 hours a day. I think that would be essential. I would really like to be able to have Wish incorporated with the drop-in center with some either emergency shelter or long-term shelter of some sort, where women could stay for as long as they needed to stay. It wouldn't be necessarily housing, but it would be shelter. And I think that's one of the things that we don't do now, but I do see in the future that there would be room to do that. I think also the other thing that we would like, there's a few things we'd like to do. We'd also like to have more supported employment. I think that we found that the supported employment program that we have now is really effective for women who come to Wish, and has really offered a stepping stone into other employment for women who have taken on the role of safety patrol for our center. And finally, well, maybe not finally, but one other thing is that we would, I think that the MAP van is something that we could have a fleet of MAP vans. And I think that we could take that model and take it to the outskirts of, you know, say Surrey and New West and Wally and all those places that have very few services, and the services are really struggling to be supported. And I think that you know, unfortunately, there are very few services in the outlying areas, and I think we really need to be able to take those services that do offer health and safety initiatives for women working out on the street. We need to take those far further afield than Vancouver.
And how do you think we're going to go about doing that? Do you think it's just raising awareness in those areas, or what do you think we need to do to take those steps?
Well, I think the steps, some may be easier than others. I think that if, one of the things is that, for instance, with the MAP van, we already have a model that works. So nobody has to reinvent the wheel. We have a whole, we did an evaluation of it, I think 2006 or so, but it was great because what it did, it just sort of laid it out for people. There's a whole plan on how you set up a service like MAP, how you staff it, how you operate, what kind of response that you make to people out there. I think it's done. So, you know, there are, if we can get the political will back, things like that in different communities, it'll be great. And it's not that we have to operate them, but we can certainly share our experience and make that learning process much easier for other agencies or other communities. So I think that, you know, there's a lot has still to be done. I think that to keep people safe, there's a whole lot of initiatives, but one of them we really, really need to look at is proper housing, and housing that is built to last and built to support those individuals who may need support within the living circumstance. And I think that is something that I don't know that anybody could dispute, that it is one of the fundamental things that people need is a roof over their heads to be able to make any move forward in their life. So I think that those are the things that we can be involved in, and certainly we can advocate for others to illuminate or shine a light on things like that for others, so that they can actually take up the cause and they can do that work in their own community. I think it's essential. And then I think the other thing that we really need to do somewhere, and this isn't just strictly up to WISH at all, but there is a terrible, terrible overrepresentation of Aboriginal women that work in the sex industry. Probably 57%. It's about 57% of the women that come to WISH are Aboriginal women. Now, that's just a travesty.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, too, and this isn't something WISH can do by itself by any means, but we need all kinds of people to come together to figure out what we're going to do so that women, Aboriginal women in particular, don't end up working out there on the street, and get to the root causes of this and start working with home communities to lessen that, that gap that allows that to happen. We really, really need to get people who work and live in Aboriginal communities back to a place where they're proud of their culture and they take strength from their culture, and they're not shamed by anybody for being an Aboriginal person, and they can stand up with pride and keep their self-esteem. So I think that it's going to be education. It's going to be home communities working together. It's going to be a lot of things, and that certainly isn't going to be WISH, but it will very much affect the face of WISH, because those numbers that tell you that nearly 60% of women, pardon me, that come to WISH are Aboriginal, that's just not okay.
No, it's not okay at all. And it's great that you want to take it to the home front with that and seeing what can be possible, and seeing if partnering with other organizations that do work in the Aboriginal communities just to strengthen that right from the get-go. Is there something as a society we can do in terms of learning and educating our kids not to judge?
Well, I think it's not to judge, not to bully, not to discriminate, and to celebrate diversity. I think that you know, when you look at this, and you know, the Aboriginal population of Canada is 3-4% of all of Canadian citizens are Aboriginal, but then when you see 57% of the women who come to WISH, and we're talking probably in the range of at least 400 different women that we see on a regular basis, that's abominable. And so we need to work together with kids in schools, kids everywhere, to really, and that's where it starts, is with the kids. It goes to the adults, but honestly, if we can work with kids so that they learn not to see color, not to see race, but to celebrate one another and be friends together, that's where it's got to come from. For sure, in my opinion.
I know
I think we've gone way far afield of Lilith Fair and WISH, but but it's true. I mean, we provide a service, and we provide a safe place. But you have to also look at that bigger picture.
No, it's key. Kate, thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
It's been a pleasure.
For people who want to find out more about WISH, what is the website address, just so that if they want to make a donation or find out more information?
Sure. It is www.wish-vancouver.net.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
And up next, you too. And up next is Hans von Klaus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He will be guiding you into the wee hours with his ambient music and his super hot voice. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be right back. Bye-bye.
She's a bad.
Sick and tired of hearing.
your band playing on and on and on. Gosh, so loud.
Man, I wish we had a safe place to play music.
Yeah, and shows too.
The Safe Amplification Site Society is a nonprofit group dedicated to establishing a legal, affordable, all-ages venue for music and